Let us now walk through the area. The massive castle dominates a verdant, fertile and idyllic land. As we approach the structure, we gaze admiringly at its gardens, which are full of local and imported species. Among the most impressive plants are the sugar canes opposite the warden's office, and further down, two huge age-long trees, a cypress and a kind of acacia, Macherium, approximately 200 years old and 26 metres tall, according to the Forestry Department. The existing castle dates back to 1454, when Louis de Magnat was Grand Master. It's built of limestone blocks and rises to a height of 21 metres. Each of its four exterior facades is 16 metres long, whereas their interior length is 13.5 metres. Ruins of the original 13th century castle lie to the east, south and southwest of the monument. The well stands out among these ruins. The castle was rebuilt after the damage it sustained during the attacks of the Mamelukes that lasted a full year until 1426, according to Geoffrey. The extant castle, finally constructed, was considered impregnable. The castle's main gate is accessible through a stone stairway and a drawbridge. Projecting high above it is a machicolation with murder holes, or meurtrières, from which boiling oil or scalding water was poured on the attacking enemy. The castle has three floors. The ground floor is divided into three vaulted halls, which communicate through arched doors. There are openings in the floor, giving access to underground water cisterns. An interior stairway with 24 steps leads up to the second floor, which is divided into two halls. The western one has a huge, simple fireplace, indicating the existence of a kitchen. The most impressive feature of the eastern hall is a mural on the south wall. It dates back to the 15th to 16th century and shows the crucifixion, with Virgin Mary on the left and St. John on the right of the cross. In the lower left-hand corner of the mural, we see the fleur-de-lis of Louis de Magnac's coat of arms. The mural has recently undergone conservation work by the Cypriot Department of Antiquities, and a protective glass plate has been placed over it. An interior spiral stairway with 33 steps leads to the third floor, where there are two halls as well. The first likely served as a dining room, and the second as a bedroom. Both feature large fireplaces with Louis de Magnac's coat of arms on the side. The fireplaces are beautifully decorated in a manner that resembles the knights' buildings in Rhodes. Both rooms are very well lit thanks to their eight windows. Each window has built-in seats, and in a recess of the north wall, there's a toilet. Another interior spiral stairway with 35 steps leads to the flat roof of the castle, with the murder holes and the 19 crenels. The top of the castle offers a magnificent view of the vineyards, the citrus trees, the Lemesos salt lake and the Mediterranean to the south. To the north lies Colossi village with the Troodos range in the background. To the south of the main structure there's a walled courtyard. On the southwest side of the building there are the ruins of an outbuilding which probably served as a storeroom and stable. Visitors must not miss an elaborately carved marble slab set into the exterior east facade of the castle. At the top of the large cruciform slab, there's a crown, and below it an escutcheon with the then full coat of arms of the Lusignans of Cyprus. A shield divided into four sections. In the upper left section, we see the emblem of Jerusalem, a crutchstick cross between four smaller crosses. In the upper right section, there's the old Lusignan coat of arms, a striped rectangle and a rearing lion. In the lower left section, we see the emblem of Cyprus, a rearing lion against a golden background. In the lower right section, there's the emblem of Little Armenia, an area in modern Cilicia, with a red rearing lion against a silver background. This coat of arms denotes that as from 1393, the King of Cyprus was simultaneously King of Jerusalem and of Little Armenia. The same coat of arms appears on coins minted by the Lusignan kings. The central escutcheon is flanked by the coats of arms of two Grand Masters of the Order of St. John, of Jean de Lastic on the left and of Jacques de Milly, who succeeded him in 1454, on the right. Below the central escutcheon we see the coat of arms of Louis de Magnac, who built the castle. There are not any other coats of arms in the castle, but Colossi came under other Grand Masters, such as Englishman John Langstrother, after whose decapitation in England, Nicola Zaplani became Grand Master of the Order. In 1488, according to the French historian de la Matrie, the castle came into the possession of the Cornaro family. First owner was George Cornaro, brother of Catherine Cornaro, the last queen of the Franks. For a long period of time, the Colossi Commandery was the richest property of the knights. This is also evidenced by the fact that with effect from 1468, the commandery was subject to an annual contribution of 4,000 ducats to the fund of the knights in Rhodes. At the outset of the Venetian administration, 1489, the commandery still owned 41 villages, producing an annual income of 8,000 ducats. When Ottoman Turks conquered the island in 1571, the Cornaro family lost that property, but maintained the title of Grand Master. The Cornaro house ceased to exist in 1799, but Count Monseningo, who wedded the heiress, continued to lay claim on the title, even after that year. On the 18th of September 1959, 1 year before Cyprus gained its independence from British rule, Colossi Castle briefly relived its past glory. A magnificent ceremony took place in its courtyard with the participation of 300 guests, including Sir Hugh Foote, Governor of Cyprus. The regalia of the order were awarded by the Lord Prior of the Order of St. John. The trumpets sounded from the battlements, and there followed an impressive ceremony. The order has been active in Cyprus since 1926 and offers its services to charities in close cooperation with the Department of Medical Services. The castle has been declared an ancient monument of the first schedule, and it's in jurisdiction of the Department of Antiquities, which is responsible for its annual maintenance. Excavations have been ongoing since 1992, mainly to the east of the castle, where there are the remains of the sugar factory. The existing factory dates back to the 14th century and is an oblong vaulted structure of limestone blocks with arched openings on the three sides. Its total floor area is around 150 square metres. To the north of this building, there are the ruins of the sugarcane crushing mill, and further north are the remains of the aqueduct. How did that medieval factory operate? The mill was fed by the Kouris River through the medieval aqueduct. The water powered the millstone, which crushed the sugarcane once it had been stripped of the leaves and cut into small pieces. According to L. Lazzarini, the same process was implemented in Venice. The sugarcane juice flowed into large cauldrons and was boiled. As explained by archaeologists, the juice, that is the molasses, was boiled two or three times, thus producing three qualities of sugar. The more it was boiled, the more light-coloured the sugar. This is also suggested by the different ceramic vessels. The sugar was poured into small jars using a clay funnel. The same process was applied in Kouklia, in Balepafos, and in the Episcopi Seraya sugar mill. Sugarcane was cultivated and thrived in Cyprus since the 10th century. However, from the 13th century onwards, its cultivation increased significantly to keep up with the increased sugar production. A large part of the production was exported to Casamartini in Venice. Powdered sugar was also produced in other areas in the east, such as Rhodes, Syria, and Alexandria. But the Cypriot sugar was of superb quality, and according to Pegolotti, was considered the best. As a result of the Lemesos earthquakes of 1567 and 1568, the factory sustained serious damage and was repaired by Murat Pasha in 1591, as shown in an engraved inscription on the south exterior wall. The ongoing excavations lead us to surmise that over a certain period during the Ottoman occupation and perhaps English rule, the factory was transformed into a flour mill. According to testimonies of foreign travellers, sugarcane cultivation continued through the first decade of the 17th century. Beyond that point, reports make reference only to cotton and silk. More specifically, Dutch traveller Cornelius van Brunn, who came to Cyprus in 1683, mentions cotton plantations in Episcopi and the production of high volumes of silk and cotton in Kuklia. Another remarkable monument lies within a short 100 metres of the castle. It is the small 12th century Byzantine church of St. Eustathius, which was modified in the 15th century. It seems that the church was the place of worship of the Knights of the Order of St. John, since according to Gunnis, in 1936, its apse still preserved the coat of arms of Louis de Magnac, Grand Master of the Order.